All right, we'll start. We got the new perek and some good, some interesting halacha lemaisa, some interesting issues that will come up today. We'll start. Hanoder min hamevushal. Someone takes a neder that restricts himself in that which is cut. So mutar b'tzli huvishaluk. Under the term cooking, right, mevushal means not b'tzli, which would be roasted. Right? And not shaluk. I mean shaluk. Shaluk would be here. All of a sudden, say that it's mevushal yoter mi dai. Right? It's cooked more than needed be. I mean, it's overcooked. Right? The in the Gemara itself, when the Rishonim disagree about there, when the Gemara talks about the Korban Pesach, it says that it's not allowed to be shaluk. Right? So there, the Rishonim discuss whether shaluk means overcooked or undercooked. Right? And over here. It seems most of Rishonim are leaning towards the, explaining that over here, shaluk means cut more than necessary. Okay, but if you look, see the Ran says shaluk bashil velo bashil. It's the first Ran there. Shaluk bashil velo bashil. It's somewhat cooked, right? So even though he says even though shaluk means cooked more than necessary in places like in Chulin and other places. Nevertheless, when we're talking about Lashon Bnei Adam, Shaluk means partially cooked, not fully cooked. Right? Yeah. So now, if he uses the term, Amar Konim Tavshil, Shani Tolim, he says, I won't have any Tavshil, anything that is cooked, right? Asu B'Maasei K'dei Ra, right? Rach Mutar B'Ava. So that person then, if he says, I am restricted for anything that is cooked, then our tavshil, any cooked item, not it's the not the verb anymore, but rather the noun. So tavshil is restricting anything that's made in a pot. But that's only things that are made in a pot that are right rock, which are thin, rather than stuff that is made in a pot that is thick, which the Gemara will discuss why.
Rach usually means soft.
Right, soft. Here, I mean, but here it's being used as opposite of ava, right? So you have blila ava and then blila raka. Right, so that's in Shabbos when you're dealing with blila, that which is restricted in kneading, thick and I would say liquidy, thin, soft. I mean, they're being used in the same context, right? But I think the word
it's the state of dilution,
right? Right. So I would use that. I think thin is probably the better word to use over here.
It's a funny word, which is not a runny food. What does that mean, runny food?
Liquidy, right? Liquidy thin. I don't know. I thought thin was a good word, but we can. I guess that the problem that they had was your issue, which is what is rach, right? Rach and soft. All right. Umutar bebeitza turmuta. He can have a beitza turmuta when he restricts himself in tavshil. He can have this beitza turmuta, which is a special cooking process to it. We'll see in the Gemara. Ubitalata remutza. This is a gourd that is, you know, popped into the ashes. So again, we'll deal with that in the Gemara. So now what happens if he restricts himself in that which is made in the pot? Then he's only restricted in that which is
boiled
or hot. So that's a good question. What does retachta mean? Rashi says, Rashi says something boiling like gravy, right? Like a gravy, like substance, a boiled substance. Whereas others say that retachta is like the Rush says that it's davar near tach but nigmar b'kdeira, something that's hot or boiled and it's finished in the pot, whatever that.
I mean, how is that different than the first case?
Right, how is that different from Bushel? Wait, we'll have to see all of these. Let me just see if anybody else thought that maybe one other explanation of what retachta is. I don't know if Ryan gave his own explanation. All right. Alright, so now we will, do we finish the Mishnah yet? No. Amar konim ayori l'ktera. If he says that I'm restricting anything that goes into a pot, sheni toim, asr b'chol mitzvashlim l'ktera, that he's also in everything that is cooked in a pot. Alright, so I have to go through what all these include or don't include. Tanya. Rabbi Oshia oser va'apopi shein raya l'davar zech l'davar. So Rabbi Oshia is oser. What's that referring to? And that's referring to our first line in our Mishnah. Hanoder min ha'mevushal, that which is cooked, can eat tzli and shaluk, can eat roasted and boiled. So he says that mevushal includes tzli and shaluk, or tzli, at least tzli, is included under mevushal and not excluded, as opposed to our Mishnah. Rabbi Oshia oser va'apopi shein raya l'davar zech l'davar. He knows he have a proof. He at least has right, mention a smachta from the pasuk, which is right by Yivashlu haPesach baEish, right, when it refers to Israel bringing the korban Pesach, right, or first them bringing the korban Pesach as by Yivashlu. Right, the Rabbi Gil Hager points out he doesn't know why you have to go to Navi or to Ketuvim, even to Divrei HaYamim to find this case. Says Kashli, my little Maisi Mikra B'Torah, Perish Rei, Gavi Pesach, Bishalta V'Achalta. It says Bishalta V'Achalta. He uses the term Bishul, and we know that Pesach can only be Tzliyesh, right? So the verb Mivushal is used by a cooking of a roasting of a Korban Pesach. So you see that subsumed in the term Bishul or Bashel is Tzli, is roasting. So he says if you know they're made of bushal, you should include not only cooked items, but you should also include tzli, roasted items. Lema b'hakam iflugeis. Let's say that this is their machlokas between Rabbi Yoshia and the Tanakhama. The Rabbi Yoshia sovar alach achar lashon haTorah, right? That you go after the Torah's lashon. The Torah defines the word bushal or bishul to include, right, tzli, or roasting, right? Whereas Tana Dilan, the author of our Mishnah Sever bin the Dharm, Haluch Achar Lashon bin Adam, go after that which, how people speak, a manner of speech, how the contemporary man would use the term Mibushal, and that would not include Sli according to the contemporary man. So the Machlokas is, when we define the Dharim, do we define it by the Torah's definition of the word or by the person's definition, the contemporary usage of the word?
We had that earlier, that Haluch
Achar, yeah. Our Gemara is pretty explicit in other places. As we go, it's Lashon B'nei Adam. That's what our Gemara is going to do right now. Yerushalmi, on the other hand, does not. Over here, our Gemara is going to go and drop this whole machlokas. Yerushalmi, on the other hand, keeps the machlokas and asks what's the nafkamina between them. And it keeps it maintains the machlokas as being such. Our Gemara here does not. It says, Lo, Uli Alma, B'nei Dharma, Achar Lashon B'nei Adam. As you suggested, there. No, that everybody holds, you have to go B'nei Dharma, Achar Lashon B'nei Adam. Ah, so then what is their machlokas? Mar ki atrei, umar ki atrei. So we've had that a time suggest. Mark,
when that's the lingua franca.
Right. So we had that, for instance, in Or Lar Basa, right? Is Or Yomama, or Levalia, right? That's one of the famous ones. But is Or mean day, or does Or mean night? So it says, Marki Atrei, Umarki Atrei. Right? That was one of the places that it's used. Okay, but Atra, the Tanya, the Tana Dilan, in the city of Artana, the Tzli, Kari Le Tzli, Umabusha, Kari Le Busha. You know, this is a surprise. They call roasting, and they call cooking, cooking. So they use the terms as being, right, mutually exclusive. Whereas, Rabbi Yoshia, Batra, Rabbi Yoshia, Afilu Tzli, Kari Mabusha. And here's when you say go cook something, that can mean either to cook it or to roast it. So where it says, didn't he bring a pasuk to support his position? If it's simply about the way they spoke in his town, what is he bringing a pasuk to support his position? So where it says, Asmachta bi'almo. It's just asmach. Because the way the Torah defines the word is not necessarily right, defining for us, but nevertheless, he just wants to show that we see such usage in the Torah, right? And just like they did in his town, the usage of Mushal was to include that which is Tzli. Okay?
Sliding a smachti, you can use all kinds of smachtis then, no matter what people are saying locally, you'll find something that sounds like it in Tanakh or something.
Right. I think his point was that in our city we do it like this, and I'll show you that this is not a. It's not a crazy type of usage of the term because the Torah uses it also. I mean, this is not a bastardization of the language to do it. We see that the Torah does the same sort of thing. I would assume that's what he was after. All right. So now, before we go to the Rishalmi, we'll do a little more in the Gemara, and then we'll go to the Rishalmi for a second because there's some nafkaminas lalacha here. Kohen Tavshil. So he uses during Tavshil, we differentiated between. Right, Tavshil Rakko and Tavshil Avo. Sounds like Marcel says, "Baha mitvashil nadar, mitavshil nadar." He restricted himself in any Tavshil. So the question here, according to the Rishonim, most of the Rishonim, or I think this mainstream Rishonim, learned that the question here is about why is he mutter in Avo? Why is he mutter to have Avo? Right, that's the one question. Some of the other Rishonim ask that it's. Why is he author in Rach? Okay, like if you look at Tosfos towards the I don't know if you have the same format, but towards the end of the Ran in Tosfos on the left side, it says Hamina Tavshil Nadar, the Rach lo havi Tavshil, and Rach is not considered a Tavshil. Okay, even to Rach Rak kemayim ba'alma, it's like water, it's a broth of some sort, and therefore it's not a tapshil, it's not a cooked item, it doesn't have any substance to it. So that's the way Tosos and some of the others learned it.
Soup is, no one will say soup isn't a tapshil.
Right. But I don't know, it's, I mean, again, it's about usage of term, right? You don't say, well, you say soup is a tapshil, but you could look at soups, a thick soup, and say that's a tapshil because it has substance to it, a broth. Right? Maybe you wouldn't call it a tapshil.
What would you call it?
You call it a soup or a broth, maybe. No, I'm just saying, I don't know. You have to say, maybe they define it differently. We've got to see in a second why.
I mean, how thick or thin the soup is, it certainly fits under the category of runny.
All right.
Yeah, all the,
that wasn't my turn.
Machal ben Drusoy and all those things, which crazy people eat it, or not crazy people, eat it, people in the lungs.
Right, right.
Is that, that machal? I mean, is that this?
It's ta- oh, that's Mavusha. Well, we said shalom. It depends how you do it.
Right. Undercooked.
No, so I'm saying that once you start a fire on it, no matter, nothing's happened. Instantaneously, it's undercooked.
Shalom.
Yeah.
Well, Mavusha, right. Well, I think when we say shalom, bashil, bashil, below bashil, means it has to get to at least a certain degree of cooking.
It's not a shul culture chara, but it's special to a certain extent.
Right. I think that's what you have to say. I mean, again, that's the Ran. Now, the other Rishonim all learned that bashul means overcooked, and their undercooked would not
count.
Would count. Would be included.
Would be included.
Right. The other way around, right? Because he's excluding shaluk. So everybody else excludes overcooked, but leaves in undercooked. He excludes undercooked, right? From the. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "Ba'atashon l'darim abayi haytanakol midi dimit achol be'rifta tapshul karile." So Bai says, this is how we're going to define it. Anything that's eaten with bread, right, then that will be considered a tapshil. So, ha-tanya, and we have a tanya in nichusa. This is, right, as a proof. Anodir min a tapshil, asur b'chol min a tapshil. Right, so a person who restricts his own tapshil is asur in tapshil, but asur b'tzliv a shaluk. He's restricted even in tzliv a shaluk, because he didn't say mipushal, but he said tapshil. Mipushal. But asur b'hitriel t'rakot. Right, he's also usher in these hitriot rakot, which are, you know, some sort of soft or softer or mushy gourds, right?
Young squash.
Right, young squash, right? Lulim rakot, soft, young, some term that they're not hard, right? Because squash is very hard. We see that a number of times, like in the Gemara Shabbos, that they would cut up the deluium in front of the behemoth to make it soft enough for them to eat it. All right, so when they're younger, they're soft. As they get older, they get much harder. Okay. I tell you, because the sick people eat them. I mean, ochlim mehem pitan. They eat with them with bread. So you see that the term, what is the finest tapshil, is that which is eaten with bread. Okay, so that's the defining category here is going to be bread. We're going to come back to it in a second, a little bit in the Gemara. So if you have, if the tapshil is thin enough that you eat it with bread and it's not a meal itself, that's the difference. Like if you have a thick soup, the soup becomes like a meal itself. Whereas if you have a thin soup, right, then you have to have the meal. What's the meal? So the bread was their main course. So something that's eaten along with bread is called a tapshil. Something that it itself is the bread, meaning that it's the main course, then it's no longer considered a tapshil. And that's why the Mishnah differentiates between, right, kedei rak, which we consider tapshil, because that is something that's thin enough to accompany bread, and therefore it'll be considered tapshil, whereas a kedei rak, ava, right, that which is made that's thick, that's so thick that you don't accompany it with bread, that you eat it as a meal itself, that's not considered a tapshul anymore. That's the definition by our Gemara. Alright. I'll just point out here, because there is a big huge nafkamina in the halacha for kashrus. This is an issue that came up a number of years ago. I'm not even sure how it got settled in the end, but it was a major issue. There's been many major issues when it comes to
fish.
Right. Well, partly fish l'shel, but also a big issue with fish, right? With tuna and fish, which there are always issues that come up. The dolphin and the netting issues and all these other things. One of the major issues came up with actually is smoking the fish. That when they're out, the fish is caught, they're brought into an island, and they are, right, the fish is smoked on this island. Right? It's not actually cooked, but it's smoked, and there are no Jews on this island. Right? That's another issue with the mashkiach coming in, because they always know the right, very good. So they always know that the mashkiach is coming in, because he has to take a helicopter there. And so they know. So then, is it really nichnas v'yotze? There are all these issues that come up with the fish. One of the issues that come up is actually this issue of, right, smoking the fish. So the guy there, they're on the lines, right? They're taking the fish, they're skinning the fish, and they're smoking them. So when they smoke the fish, is that a problem? Mevushal. Right? Is that considered bishul akum? Or is that not considered bishul akum? So our Gemara does not address it. Our Gemara does not address mi'ushan, which is smoked. But the Yushalmi, on the other hand, does address this issue, or at least tries to, attempt to, and then asks the question. It says, I know der minam mevushal, mahu she'emuter minam mevushan. Someone takes a neder from mevushal, is mi'ushan, is smoked, subsumed under the term mevushal. So one nafkumina is he takes a neder, right, from the mevushal, is smoked. The other nafkumina might be with the gabe, bishul akum. What's considered bishul, right, is mevushal, right? If smoking is mevushal, then, right, it would be possibly considered bishul akum. We have that today with microwaving, right? Is microwaving bishul akum? So I'm seeing machlokas, you know, in the Achrei Acharonim, right? That whether microwave is classified for bishul akum, mostly because the lack of fire. You know, that it might be that bishul akum, the whole gzeiras bishul akum has to do with fire, and there must be a fire present in order to have bishul akum.
Right, Shabbos, it is a whole machlokas between Rav Moshe or Shlomo Zalman.
Right, whether you violate Shabbos, right?
When it's totally on derech bishul and right, not on the actual means of bishul.
Right, so that's a microwave. You have the same issue by Shabbos, that whether bishul is considered bishul b'Shabbos when you cook in the microwave. So that is more muskam. I would say that is more muskam that you violate Shabbos by using the microwave. That is considered mevushal. By gzeros bishul akum. Right there, because we have other types of bishul in the Mishnah and Shabbos. Like for instance, you have a salty fish. If you rinse them off, right there, the Gemara considers that mevushal. Considers that right tikkun enough of a tikkun to be mevushal.
They're talking about, if I remember correctly, whether things considered a choshud, you know, lawless shulchan melach.
Right, that's bishul akum. All right, so that we'll get to, right? That's bishul akum, about the definition of what bishul akum is. But just bishul akum, like zeros, there might be a more emphasis or focus on the fire, because it has to do with the pulat of lighting the fire.
Dunkin' Donuts, like Kuzrick Donuts on Rockaway Turnpike.
Very good.
They have the eggs on a croissant or everything, which is great. And Rabbanan already said, eventually the entire chain of Dunkin' Donuts made it be terrible to get around it. But what we used to do is we actually go in and turn on the microwave. And they knew, the workers were late.
So there's a sign in the Dunkin' Donuts in Far Rockaway, there's right, a sign that says that the eggs are bishul akum if you
probably,
put them in.
Probably not anymore. Because what they did was the whole chain, you see them actually, you know, crack the eggs and then and that's the reason they did it,
because it's cooked already,
and it's
a hashgacha. So that's interesting. So at the time, Far Rockaway had a sign on the outside that says it's all kosher, except it could be bishul akum for the eggs. Whereas in Elizabeth, the Dunkin' Donuts did not have that, and that was a smachlokus, whether putting it in the microwave is considered bishul akum or not. So now, Mushan, what's it say?
The microwave, I must be missing something. It's electric, right? It's electric, so it's going to be binyan.
Somehow,
if you put a microwave on a Shabbos,
Somehow the microwave is turned on without actually pushing the button.
Obviously, this is something I was missing there.
Right, not using the electricity, although that's not so simple to say the electricity is binyan. But all
right, so, that's the whole place of Shiloh, right?
Assuming the electricity is a problem, you get around that problem. The question is the microwaving itself.
Right.
Okay. But now here, is mushan, is smoked included under mushal? Maushe mutar b'mitugan. What about basting? You know, maushe mutar b'tavshil shenidbash b'bei tveria. What about stuff that's cooked in the hot springs? Right, Rabbana the kizarin shalom mushin maushe bo mishum bishuliat goyim. Smoked. What's the din with regards to what bishulei goyim? Is that considered official akum or not?
Things cooked in the sun. I think that was one thing that
told us that
he says actually okay.
Right. Well, yeah. Chama is not right. Not an issue.
It's not derech bishul.
Chama is a question about atu, told us aish, right? Okay, that's my focus. All right. So, ma'o shebo mishum tashile Shabbos. Is that considered cooking on Shabbos? Mashi bo mishum basa b'chala. Basa b'chala has to be cooked. Is mushang included? Mashi tavel to my throat. Does it make you tevel for my throat? Cooking is
in my... Not when you're allowed to eat it, obviously. But meaning, are you just...
Is it doraisa? Is it doraisa or derabanan? Because you have to be mvashel basa b'chala. You can be over a doraisa just for cooking it. Right? One. And number two is it's only osur to eat. Basa b'chala that is mvushal m'doraisa. Means derabanan. Even any other type of basa b'chala that's mixed together is considered problematic. All right, so they can use the braces. So these are all questions that the Rishami poses. Does not have a conclusion over here. But the fact that the Rishami entertains this question of Me'ushan and whether it's considered part of cooking or bishlakam raised this issue by the fish on the when if they smoked the fish would there be bishlakam and would it be included, and it may have to do with our gemara here. What is mevushal? What's the definition of the term mevushal? And that's exactly what Rishami is doing. Rishami is asking in the same context, is mevushal included under mevushal, and is it right bishlakam? And the gemara Rishami sees the two as being right, equating the two questions. Whatever is subsumed under Mevushal is also what's problematic for Bishul Akum. Alright? So that's an interesting question, and it has a big halakha
around cooking. Did they mention Kavush there also?
No.
I remember the Gemara, I think, when it has that discussion with it, but it says Kavush and Shaluk and
include. But Kavush, generally, we see that halakha has halakha, right? Have a look at Mevushal, right? All right. Anyway, it's important to Yerushalmi and important issue for halacha. I don't know what happened with the Olatuna stuff because there's so many controversies. But we know that the OU still is machshered in Israel. They're not.
Wasn't that whole fight? Is it all about I forget, but it's treif fish being
sort of. The dolphin, the swordfish being caught in the net. The netting issue, which is that the other fish get caught in the netting, and then they would.
I thought that also the smoking was an issue somewhere, in the same room or something, the same
right.
Location.
Yeah, so they, it's all the same.
They've been always quoted. Ravan Salvechik, you know, he's saying, what, there's a man sitting on the top of a boat with a long white beard saying this.
Right, no, issues. These are all major controversies. I don't know, it settled down. It was very loud, I would say, 10 years ago probably it was very loud issues, and they have settled down now. I'd say that the American Ashkachos give Ashkachos to tuna, whereas the Israeli Ashkachos do not give a lot of Ashkachos, and therefore they don't. A lot of times when the American tuna is brought here, they're not willing to be, They have a tuna fish. They have their own dagim or whatever. I don't know what they use here, but it's different, and they don't accept necessarily the American Ashkachos here. It's one of those places where the American Ashkachos, quote unquote, are more mikil with regards to approving these products. All right. Back to our Gemara. Now we have a little fun here. I guess that's an understatement. All right, here's the now. The Gemara wants to know, is it really true that you eat gourd when you're sick? All right, so that's what the Gemara says. Nini, is that really true? All right. Baha, Rabbi Yirmiyah Chalash. Rabbi Yirmiyah was sick. Alagabehu Asiel Yasuye. So this doctor went in to cure him. Chazakra de Machat Vibete. He saw a gourd that he was eating in his house. Shafke, he left him in Afak. He walked out, says there's no chance. Amar Malach Mavta, right? Malach Mavta, Isplay Ladain Vibete. This guy has the Malach Mavis in his house, this gourd, right? Va'ana Yol Asiel, and I'm going to come in and cure him, meaning I'm out of here. Right? So the Gemara says, I'm going to cure him. Mokasha, habarikiche, habde ushune. It has to do with whether they're soft. Right? The soft gourds are good for the chole, you can eat it. And the ashune are the older ones or the harder ones are bad for the chole. Rabbi Berlu, amar habakra, gufe, habigave. Right? The Kara, it's the same.
We don't know.
Rabbi gufe, it's depending on if you're eating the inside of the gourd, which is soft, or the outer, I don't know, the skin, the rind, whatever they're including here, that's harder, and that's not good for you. Damar Rav Yehuda, Leliba Dekra, Silka, and Leliba Dekitna, Bekutcha. And he says that you should eat the Leliba Dekra, which is the soft part. Lulavi means the soft part of the gourd with Selek, right? You should eat it with beets, I guess, right?
Leeks.
Leeks. All right, Silka, Leeks. Liba de kitna, the soft part of the flax. Sounds like the Rishonim are going to talk about that they boiled the flax seed and it had a soft part of it. They used to eat that with kutcha. Kutcha is something we find in kuteach and sakim and in chulin, which was some sort of
sour milk in
the yogurt. In that yogurt direction?
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Maybe. It was, I don't know, the yogurt includes moldy bread.
It was some sort of dip. It was some sort of dip that they had, some potent dip that they had there.
And so Dr. Storm's at, he's eating squash, but he's able to tell her that he didn't eat.
Let's go. Well, this isn't a recommendation. He just says it's good stuff. But David said, this is an interesting line here. But David said, also the Omro Bufay Amaretz. You can't tell Amay Aretz about this. So this is a great line. So now here, the Rishonim have, they have three or four explanations in the Rishonim here. Try to pop quick through them quickly about why you can't tell us the Amaretz. This is Rashi. So Rashi says, it's Meshum Tadavar Me'ula Hula Refua. It's something good for cures, curative properties. You can't tell the Amay Aretz to get benefit from this. Since it has curative properties, you can't give in Amaretz benefit. That they shouldn't eat so much of it and get and waste all the flax doing that. So that will introduce us to other Rishonim. All right. So the other Rishonim have this.
What's first Rashi? What kind of parish is that?
That's exactly what the others ask on Rashi. That's I think the Tosfos says about. Like, where did he get such a thing from? It's
the way we didn't have Amaretz.
All right, you know.
It was constantly a battle. They hated them and so on. But you don't want
to. Yeah, we're going to get to that story. That story is going to come up with Rabbi Akiva on the next Shabbos daf, and we'll get to that. But yes, there is some sort of animosity between them. But it just seems strange, right? So everybody else rejects Rashi. Try to use these to garces.
Besides, we had it. Didn't we have that? If you have the power to heal somebody, and you don't do it.
It seems strange. I mean, it seems strange that you wouldn't be Mahane. The Amaretz, I'm giving you all the possibilities. That's it. I think the other Rishonim reject it. The Ran suggests that it's a problem of.
That makes fun.
Right. Mal'igin. No, but I don't think that's the Ran. See, the Mal'igin is the Rush and the Tosfos. And they say in different directions. The Rush says, Shil Igu al Dvarenu, Shil Dvarim Elu Afilu Anoshim Yodototam. So the Rush says that these are such simple items that everybody knows about, even the women know about it, that why is it found in the Gemara? And that's what the Rush says, that they're going to make fun, that this is what they have in their Gemara, these types of, silliness, this is what they put in, little recipes of bad stuff that everybody knows about, that's what the Rush says. Tosa says the ego is in a different direction. So he says, Maligin Aleinu, Ba'om Rishanu Kovim Milei Techucha Bitula B'Shas. Right, we're going to put in this silly stuff in the Shas. But Kuntris Perish, Sasagumo the Hemshim Takana, Lonira. He brings down his, he says, I don't know where that came from, right? So Rosh says it's so simple, everybody knows it. So why would you have, that's what they'll laugh at us. And the Tosa says, no, they're going to laugh at us because these are silly items. I mean, not that it may not even be efficacious. And he's saying that, why do you have this, silliness in the Gemara? And the last thing is the second Gerson in Rashi, which I think the Ran brings down also, which is that they're going to cause a shortage of flaxseed. I mean, there's going to be a run on flaxseed because it won't be available for its normal usage because they're going to want to use flaxseed for this curative properties or for its health reasons. It happens to be that flaxseeds are very healthy. And even in modern day, right, it's been figured that flaxseed is very healthy. Now, so they would have a front. It's like, I would say the equivalent today, we have something that's happened like that today, which is corn. Corn to about a year ago was very plentiful. Right? There was tons of corn. The corn prices were, flying and coming down. Corn prices, right, all of a sudden somebody says that corn's good for ethanol. There's an alternative uses for corn. And now, all of a sudden, the corn markets are so tight, the prices are going up, and companies like Kellogg's and others who use corn as part of their raw ingredients are getting killed because the pricing is always going up on corn because they have this alternative, usage. Somebody told them. So this is Gemara's fear also. If you tell them about this alternative uses for the flaxseed, it's all of a sudden they're going to be a run on flaxseed and the prices will go up because they'll have this alternative to use the flaxseed for. All right, just interesting. Rabba Amar Mancholin, when we're talking about those that are sick, who are we talking about? He says Rabbanan. That means Rabbanan. Rabba the Tamei. Rabba is going to use the reasoning. The Amar Keman Machlin al Kitsire Val Meire, Marie. Who do we daven? When we daven for Cholin. Right? What is the, who do we hold like? G'man, Rabbi Yossi. We hold like Rabbi Yossi. So this is a machlokus between Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah. Gemara Rosh Hashanah says that the Rabbanan say, Akol kavui mi Rosh Hashanah. Everything was nigzar mi Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, no purpose in davening. Right? Some people say, what? Like the Tosfos brings down here. No, there's no purpose in davening. It's a tefillah shav to daven. It's already nitzar. Your davening is what? Is meaningless. It's tefillah shav. Shouldn't even daven. Right? Whereas Rabbi Yossi believes that a person's status is nigzar b'chol yom b'yom, every day. It's nigzar b'chol yom b'yom. So when he says, when we daven for cholim, when we ask for the cholim to be cured, we are holding like Rabbi Yossi. Right? So we hold like Rabbi Yossi. So there's a Tosfos in Rosh Hashanah there, in Daftet Zion. There, the Tosfos asks, what do we do? I mean, we do daven for cholim, and we hold like the Rabbanan. So what do we do? So there, Tosfos has to bring down, I'm going to look it up again, but the Tosfos over there says that either that b'mamat harbe, I think if you make significant effort, you're able to overturn a gzeira that was nigzar mi Rosh Hashanah, therefore we dive into, because of that possibility. Right, the idea that, well, there we say by Rosh Hashanah, but the fact that we say by also by Taniyot, there are other times, maybe there's a possibility that you can overcome that which is nigzar Rosh Hashanah. Right? Or the other possibility is that even though it's nigzar Rosh Hashanah, exactly how it comes out and exactly the manifestation of it, right, can be determined by tefillah.
In advance. So, the tefillah comes before the gzeira.
Right. Well, it
can affect the gzeira that happens in the following Rosh Hashanah.
That's possible.
You're saying going backwards.
Yeah, I'm saying backwards. Because why do you dive in the middle of the year for something to be cured?
So
you're sick.
If you're sick, that person's going to die.
Right.
What can you
tell us? If he's going to be sick, why daven on that day? That'd be better.
No one mentions that. What about affecting the future gezeira?
Right. So that way to Rosh Hashanah, he's talking about we're davening right now. He's not saying next year, make sure that I'm healthy. He's saying
right now,
I want to get better. Right. I want to be healthy. So that's it. So that, I think the Tosfos answer is up over there. We show him discuss it over there. But they're holding like Rabbi Yossi, who says that you can, that the gezeira is every day, and therefore we daven. Who are these tzirei and meirei?
The old Rabbi Shemina, by the way, we don't see a minimum kainu except in the Seres Meshuvah.
Oh, so there you go. So they had that. They were.
There's a machlokas relating to this idea, also whether one of the opinions says that Mechir Chavshit, a person can actually override. So in other words,
it's Gemara Shabbos on Kufim Ben Shabbos, in the end of Shabbos, where there is Ein Mazal Yisrael, and then Rabbah and another brother Amorayim talk about that they were born under certain constellations. Right, someone is born under the mazel damo. One is one is born under the mazel dam. One is born under this mazel. I was born under this mazel, and therefore I'm this, and therefore I'm that. So, how could it be that how could you have mazel be? First of all, if a mazel Israel, how could mazel affect them? Number one. Number two is if mazel is impacting, what constellation you're born in is impacting, then what happens to bechira chofshis? How do you determine predeterminance versus free choice? Which is a bigger question. All the Rishonim deal with it at the end of the Gemara and Shabbos, in the last 2000 Shabbos, where that sugya comes up. Many of the Rishonim speak about it there extensively. And that's what I think you're referring to.
This is even beyond that. Let's say a person does everything that he's supposed to. Another person, a bandit of some sort, to come and cause him physical harm, or even kill him. And it's got nothing to do, I don't know if that's part of the discussion of Mazal Zah, but that's, in other words, it's got nothing to do with his merits. It's Machlokas, remember, it's Machlokas Shem, whether it's possible such a thing to have. A person has Chuyos, if someone else has Bechira, can actually
impact on him. Right. So it's got to do with this predeterminance and Bechira Chavshis. All right. So it's a big sugya. Not a sugya today, but a very, very big sugya. All right. Mi hamar tzire umiire, right? What?
Maria.
Sorry. Tzire umiire. Shema mino. Tzire mamash. What are tzire mar cholim mamash? Real sick people. What's Maria? Maria are the rabbanon. They are sick from either they learn too much Torah and that makes them weak, or that they don't take care of themselves because they're learning so much Torah. But either way, you see from this that Rabbah's latamei that who are the cholim? Cholim are rabbanon. Okay, umudar ba'ava, masnisan the loki ba'avloi. Our mission is not like these Babylonians. Tamar of Zaira, ba'avloi tibshai, these foolish Babylonians, da'achli lachma ba'lachma, they eat bread with bread. They eat bread along with a thick dish, which is that they're eating bread twice, according to
that.
It's a bread sandwich.
Nama.
Right, very good. So that's it, nama. So Amar of Chista, like the Mishalahon Halan Nakdani, there's no but the Hutzal, there's nobody to ask these Nakdani can either be Nikiah Das or those that are particular about their food, whatever this means. These people who really who know either eating etiquette or so particular about their food, they know what's right. Right? Hadein Daisa, that these Babylonians that eat Daisa, right, which is a thick porridge, right, which is like an oatmeal-y type of dish. They eat it with bread. Hey, chenmalei lemechle, which is better to eat it? Techite v'lachma techite? You should make the daisa out of wheat and eat wheat bread. With the sari v'lachma desari, or have it be made out of barley. Right? The daisa made out of barley and the bread made out of barley. Or dilma techite besari. Maybe you should mix and match. Maybe your daisa should be made out of wheat and your bread should be made out of barley. With the sari v'techite, and that, or if you make your daisa out of barley, that you should have your bread made out of meat. Alright. Rav Achle b'chassise. Rav eat it with chassise. And we have chassise is kemach shel kvayot, right? It's roasted flour. Roasted, some sort of roasted flour. All right. Rav Barun ashkei the Rav Huna, the kachal daisa be'etzbate. This is a very, very interesting Gemara. So Rav Barun found that his father Rav Huna was eating daisa with his fingers. He was eating it with his hands. Why are you eating with your hands, your fingers? I mean, that's just not polite. Rav said like this, when you eat daisa with your fingers, it's tastier. Even better with two fingers. And even better with three fingers. So that's the way to serve it up is right in with the hands, right in the porridge, and into the mouth. So the Rav said to Chia's son, "V'chinam arlei Rav Huna the Rabba Bray," and Rav Huna said the same thing to Rabbi's son. "Mizamnin lamechal daisa ad parsa." Right, if they invite you to eat daisa, it's worth walking up. It's worth walking. Okay, most of you shouldn't say late parsa means what? That it means that go. It's worth walking a mile. It's worth working a parsa to get your daisa. You know, if somebody's cooking daisa, take a walk for a mile. Rashi brings an alternative presentation here that doesn't that daisa is not satisfying until you walk a parsa afterwards. Make a bistra the Torah. Someone invites you to eat meat, right? Meaning the ox meat. I mean, that was a good roasted ox meat. That's a lot to parsa. I'd walk even 3 miles to get to that. I mean, that's so good. Or again, according to Rashi, you should walk that amount in order for it to be satisfying. So I'm Rav Chia, Rav Chia Bray, Rav said to Chia's son, Rav Chia Rav Huna, the Rav Bray, Komidam, lo tiflot kamei rabbeich. Not a lot of spit in front of your Rebbe. Right? Anything that comes up, you get some, is it bile in your mouth, or some sort of, spittle that comes into your mouth. Do not spit it out in front of your Rebbe. The varmin krav daisa, except it was generated by gourds and daisa, because that stuff is shehin domin l'tila betilta shel aver. They're like a lead, lead rod or a string of lead. I mean, it's poison, and it's so poisonous, and therefore afilu kamei shavur malkapol. You can even spit it out in front of the shavur malkapol, okay, in front of the emperor. You know, that it's so dangerous for you that we give you permission. That's something don't hold back. When you got to spit, you spit in this instance. Okay, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. This is my favorite. Listen, Rabbi Yehuda, had achel daisa be'etzbatei. One of them was eating his daisa. They were eating the porridge. I mean, they had a joint porridge bowl in front of them.
Fondue.
Right. One was eating with his fingers. Had achel b'chutza, and one of them was using let's call it utensils. Was using some sort of reed to scoop it up into his mouth. So Amar Lei, the Achel Behutza, the one who was eating with the utensil, the Achel Be'etzbatei, said the one who was eating with his fingers, Ad Matai Atam Achel Lani Tzalatzba. How long are you going to put your dirty fingers into my bowl over here, right? So you're going to see in a second that Bishonim said he was referring to the dirt under his nails or on his fingers that weren't cleaned out properly, that he keeps sticking them into his porridge. Right? Amar Lei, the Achel Be'etzbatei, the guy who was eating with his fingers, says the Achel Behutza that was using the utensil, Matai Atam Achel Lani Rokha. How long you're putting your private fork into my public dish? Right, you keep eating off the hutzel. It's got your, saliva on it, and then you dip it right back into my porridge.
Double dipping.
Exactly.
I don't want to go back to doing science film.
All right, there you go. So now, I mean, I don't know. So I can't believe they're arguing about this. I mean, I would say both of them are just
isn't the rope on the fingers.
Right. Yeah. So that's what the others say. That doesn't really get on your fingers. That's going to be shown to discuss a little bit about that. I can't. I can't imagine it's even an issue. But they say that the rope doesn't really, when you use your fingers, doesn't really come up. With a hoop, though, you have to really scrape your mouth on it, and therefore
or
the rope gets on it.
Maybe he only did the to maximum of 10. He used a separate finger for each one.
That was the anyway. This is their machlokes. I just would just point out. But even though today's, I think in etiquette today, I think both would be considered inappropriate. Mm-hmm. So Rabbi Yehuda and not sanitary.
His
fingers every time, right? Right. They always have to deal with that. Why isn't there rope on the fingers?
I mean, this Gemara is proof. And who was it before? Rashi, whoever was before, has their own explanation of the Gemara of what people make fun of if you put in the. Those two medicines.
It's a bigger issue.
It's a bigger issue.
Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, I take the Kamayu Bluspin. They got this Bluspin. Whatever this Bluspin is.
Right.
What?
Some figs, he said.
Yeah, it's they're these aged figs, right? These overripe figs. I think that was the term. I can't see it now, but yeah. Big overripe figs, which is, they were brought from Rabbi Yehuda Ochel. You didn't eat them. Rabbi Shimon did not eat them. I'm like, you did my time lo achil. So he says to them, why aren't you eating? Right? He says, Rabbi Shimon, why don't you eat these? I'm like, I'm a local mar. Why aren't you eating this? I'm a lay. Reb Shimon, elo ain yotzim ibnei ma'ayim. This stuff gets this stuff gets stuck. This is a clogging machine. It's not good for you. I mean, this is right. You're gonna need. This is just not the type of food that you want to get stuck in your body. So I'm a lay. Reb Yehuda, listen to this answer. Koshkin, I would definitely eat it then. Why? Shinishmuk alam lamokar. I mean, if it doesn't leave your body, then you can get, you know, I mean, it's like eating meals for 2 days. I mean, you fill up the stomach, it doesn't get emptied out, and you can be, you know, this will be satisfying you for days here. So it's even better. All right, Rabbi Yehuda, I really, honestly, I don't have a lot to add here, so I'm reading through the Gemara, but I just, you know, we have to learn it, it's Gemara, but I don't have a lot to add right now. All right, Rabbi Yehuda, you ought to tell me.
Medically, I think they said it's something that is slower to digest. Your body gets more of the nutritional value.
Right,
it has more time to.
Sure, this has.
Not a time release medication.
Sure. Yeah.
Rabbi Yehuda, you have to come into Rabbi Tarfon. Right? Is Rabbi Yehuda is just sitting in front of Rabbi Tarfon? I'm like, Rabbi Tarfon, ayom panecha tzuhuvim. Your face looks so nice, red, and you know, you feel look full faced and happy. So I'm like, emes, yatzu avadecha l'sadeh. No, I'll tell you why. Because last night your servants went out into the field. Yevielanu traden. They brought us in trident, which is beets, right? Bachalunum below melach, and we ate them without salt. Bimachalunum below melach, if he really had provided the salt too, koshkin shayupanatuvim, we would even had, our face would have been even redder. I mean, I guess that the assumption is that the red beets, light up his face, give him some sort of red, ruddy look to his face, light it up. Amri ha'u matrinitza, so Rabbi Yehuda was known for his rosy cheeks. Alright, so there's this matron said to Rabbi Yehuda, Mora Virabi, you're a posik halacha and drunk. And then she looked at his red complexion or his rosy cheeks and said, you know, this guy's a drunkard. Right, so he's you're a Mora halacha and a drunkard. Amar la haim nuta biyodo, you know, I take an oath on this woman. Ita imnan, I never drink wine. Elikidusha ve'avdalka, perkidish ve'avdala, ve'arakase de pischa. And the four cups on Pesach. And this is my favorite part here. V'chugrani tzidai, that after I drink the four cups of wine on Pesach, I have to wrap my head, right, on my temples, right? Pesach adateres. From Pesach until adateres. I got such a hangover from drinking the wine on Pesach that I have to keep this with my head wrapped to get rid of the headache afterwards from eating the four cups of wine. So you have a... It's an amazing. So this is it's an important. And he comes to learn. It says here that you only drink. He only drank alcohol by Kiddush and Havdalah. Kiddush and Abdullah, and the four kosos and Pesach. But it's important here because a lot of people opt out of drinking wine for the four kosos and Pesach, right? Because they can't handle it, they can't, it's too much, it's going to ruin their Seder. All the reasons that are given for not eating the four cups, and you see here, and this is a proof that some of the Rishonim break, that despite the difficulty of drinking four cups, right, that you have to drink them. Even you see here that Rabbi Yehuda had to wrap his head from Pesach Adateres. I mean that he got sick. He really got significantly sick from drinking the four cups. Nevertheless, he still drank the four cups of wine.
And your personal sock equipment?
Sure.
I was not solo. I used to worry about Seder night going out to drive the ambulance after four kosos. That's Rabbi Willie. Wouldn't be Monte Rachel's.
Yeah.
He says, drink the 5% stuff. And right. I've done that ever since, and it's great. But, you know, the Rashi is like water.
Right. So, because Rabbi Willig, because he's very, very, he has a huge akvada. Rabbi Willig does not drink alcohol at all. He's against any alcoholic drinking. Very strict.
He's my kid.
Right.
Picked it up on wine, not
that's because
of
the Rav. Yeah. It's because of the Rav. The Rav is passing that grape juice is not sufficient for
Kiddush.
For Kiddush, because it says it requires, the Rashbam says that it requires shear, and it requires mevusam, it requires the alcohols and a significant part of the shear being generated by wine, and then to have it be significant. And part of Kiddush, you have to have something that has alcohol in it. But otherwise, he's like Rabbi Yehuda. He will not drink Kiddush, Havdalah, and Arbakosos. But he's very machmir, even for women who are pregnant, to drink the Arbakosos, and to, he says that there's no detrimental effect.
The 5%.
Right, the lighter stuff. But he points it out. And again, this is a lot of the Rishonim bring this as a proof that you can't opt out. And drinking grape juice is not a solution for the Arbakosos.
Again.
I don't mean like real babies, but age of two. Right, the a person's face is lit by his wisdom. Rabbi Yehuda got himself a lot of trouble. His rosy cheeks were, and his red nose were getting him in trouble all the time. So this stuki meant Rabbi Yehuda, panacha domim I kemalvei ribis o kemagadlei chazirin. He looked so happy and joyful. Right, so the machanita thought he was drunk. And he thinks you were either, you went with interest, or you're bringing up pigs. Because both of those are very profitable businesses. That are restricted, but very profitable businesses. And therefore, that's why you're so happy, that's why your face looks so bright. So I'm alive, you die. Tarvayuasirin says, sorry, I'm neither of those, because we don't do, as Jews, we don't do either of those things. We don't bring up pigs, and we don't lend with interest. Ella, so why does my face look so good? And who would have thought this? Esrim ba'arba beitakise, yisleim in a beitad, beis medrash. There are 24 bathrooms between me and my beis medrash. Kol shavashani, nechas l'chalecha b'chad, and I use each one of them on the way. Okay? This one I think is nice. This little piece of the Gemara I can get into. He was going to the Beis Medrash. Shakil Gufal Katfei. He used to carry a barrel on his shoulder. Work is good, because the work is mechaberet its owner. Why? Because when he used to get to the Beis Medrash, if he didn't bring the barrel, he would have to sit on the floor. The fact that he brought the barrel with him allowed him to sit on the barrel in the Beis Medrash. So what his point was, that if you do the work, right, you get the benefits of work. Work is a positive thing. Shimon Shakil Tzina Al Katvei. Shimon used to take a tzina, some sort of, I guess, basket on his shoulder, same idea that he brought the basket and he was able to sit on it when he got to the base magic. So again, this idea that if you make the effort, if you exert and do the work, right, then you're the beneficiary of the work that you do.
I totally have errors on this.
Right. Exactly the idea that if you think about it in advance and do the work, that you'll be, in the end, the work pays off. I mean, that there's value to doing, making the effort, extending yourself. To be to the Rabbi Yehuda, nafak akdak imra. So the wife of Rabbi Yehuda went out and she bought some wool. Abed lima, right, the hutvi. She made this, some sort of coat, like, I don't know, overshirt or some garment that she made for him, like a sweater, I don't know what you want to call it, that he used to wear. Kadnapak l'shuka mechsebe. When he was glad, he was so precious to him, that was his wife made. So that would be a very, you know, on one hand, it's a very romantic, you know, idea here that his wife makes him something, and even though, you know, it's not exactly the nicest thing in the world, that he wears it everywhere. That's what we're going to see in the Gemara. Although it seems to be the Rishonim, you point out that they were extremely poor, which we'll see at the end of the Gemara, and this was all he had anyway. So that was the only thing he would go out with. But also, so we can have both interpretations. All right, kind of fuck the shuk, the when he went out to the shuk, he used to wear it.
But not a begadisha.
What?
Not a begadisha issue.
No.
It was unisex.
Yeah, it wasn't a woman's clothing. It was something that she made for him. So when he'd use it the next day when he went out to daven, right? So they were so poor. That it was so precious to him that when he used to wear it, he used to say, like, you know, that we say, Shatani mi'io means that he wrapped me in a, right, in a jacket, meaning that in something that was even, it was beyond what it was really made for. I mean, that this was something small, and he was calling it a mi'io. It was so precious to him. Right? Zim nechada gozer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel taniso. So one time, Shimon Gamliel was gozer a tanis. Rabbi Yehuda lo akla. The Beit Tanita, he didn't come. Amalei, so they said to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, lo isleik suye, he has nothing to wear, meaning that he doesn't have an overcoat to wear. I don't know if his wife was out with it that day, or he didn't feel it was appropriate for him to come to the, right, to the Beit Medrash with this type of kisuye to daven. Started like Lima, so Rabbi Shimon Gamliel,
he brings it on the show. He's embarrassed to wear their cloak, often worn by a woman.
A woman, okay, so it is, he says, say, isleik suye, started like Lima. So he says, they certainly gleam. So Shimon Gamliel sends him a jacket, a cloak to wear. The low kabil, who did not accept it. Belly tifta, when the shliach came to his house, he lifted up the curtain. I mean, tifta is like a machatzelet. Right? They had some sort of, you know, the equivalent in the east, the far east, where they have like, you know, they don't have a door, they have some sort of a shade or a screen that's there. So he pulls away the screen, and he shows him, like, the shlucha, prazi ma'iko, says, look what all we have. I mean, they had nothing. He opens up, he says, look what we have here. Right? Mi alo nechali did nehani behadin am. I just don't want to get any hand off from this world, so I don't want to accept any gifts. So all the Rishonim say, there was ma'is nisim, that when he opened it up, the place looked like it was full of everything. They looked like they were not poverty stricken. And in order so he wouldn't be embarrassed, right, so he showed them, oh, look, we have everything, I just don't want to get any hanoah from anybody else, but really we have. The truth was that he didn't have, right, and that was why he was embarrassed to come, because either he didn't, it wasn't available to him that day, or it wasn't appropriate for him to wear, and therefore he didn't want to come out with it. And this is going to lead into the Gemara on Shabbos, which is a very, very famous story, and we had it in Ksubos, and here the Gemara in Nedarim, about Rabbi Akiva and Kavla Sevua, how Rabbi Akiva and his wife lived after Kavla Sevua threw them out, and the poverty that they were in. It's a very beautiful, romantic story, great story, and it's a shame it's on Shabbos.